Good morning, church. It is so good to see all of your bright, shining faces this morning. Oh, so last week we started a new series going through the book of Ecclesiastes, and I was informed at the end of the service that I pressed you guys a little bit. And if you weren't here last week, have no fear. I'm going to go over it again so we can all together be super encouraged. But no. So this week, we're skipping chapter 2. We're going to go right into chapter 3. And we'll kind of go through why we're doing that as we go through the sermon this morning. But this morning, we're going to be talking about one of the most fascinating things in life. And when I say fascinating, I mean frustrating. It's that nasty four-letter word, time. Now, depending on who you are, depending on, you know, your outlook on things, different things like that, you mean, time can be something that really doesn't bother you at all. It can be something that you enjoy, or it can be something that just seems to suck the fun out of everything. It just kind of depends on your outlook on it. But what's really interesting about time, you see, some people look at time as that thing that prevents them from being able to do all of the things that they want to do, or sometimes even able to do all the things that they need to do. Some people look at time as kind of like that constant companion. It goes with you through life. It's just always there. Personally, I like to look at time as the great equalizer. And the reason I look at it in that way is because it really does not matter how wealthy you are, how poor you are, if you're an adult, if you're a kid, if you're married, if you're unmarried, if you're employed, if you're unemployed. None of that really matters when it comes to time, because we all get the same amount of time every single day. We all have those 24 hours that make up a day. And either we're going to do something constructive with that time, or it's going to pass us by and we will never see it again. There's a quote about time. It's very, very interesting. It says, you know, time is like a coin. You can spend it, but you can only spend it once. Because once a second comes and goes, it's gone. It's gone forever. There's no getting it back. You can't manufacture more time for yourself. Now, as a society, we like to think that that's not true. We like to think that we can create all the time that we possibly could have or need or want. And that's why there's so many things out there that are designed to try and turn back the clock. All these diets out there, they're supposed to make you healthier and live longer. All these exercises, all these surgeries, all these different things that exist in our society, they are to essentially try to give us more time. And Solomon made an observation so many years ago that, quite honestly, we know in our hearts is true, and yet for some reason we seem to fight it. And that is the fact that time is ever going to be progressing. Time goes onward. There's no getting it back. There's no going back to try and relive it all over again. And there's no controlling that the future will eventually get here, because time continues to march onward. Now, depending on your outlook, that could be a really depressing thing, or it could be an encouraging thing. But Solomon gives us three observations this morning that I want us to look at with regards to time. And so look with me at Ecclesiastes 3, and we'll start reading in verse 1. He says, "For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. So, just to recap how we get to this point, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, which we went through last week, Solomon makes this very big blanket statement over life. And in chapter 1, verse 2, he says, "Vanity of vanities, O vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Essentially saying, all of life is completely and totally meaningless. There is no point, there is no purpose, there is no value, because all of life is vanity. It is a whisper. It is essentially a soap bubble that burst. There is nothing. And the point that he's making in all of that was all of life really is meaningless. There really is no point and no value in life if God has no role to play in life. That's the main focus of what he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. If you take God out of life, then life no longer has value. Because God is the one that gives life value. God is the one that gives life meaning. If you take him out of it, then you've taken out the meaning and the value of life. And then he goes through and he gives several different reasons, gives several different points that he makes in chapter 1, kind of support that statement that he makes at the beginning of chapter 1. And then at the end of chapter 1, going all the way through chapter 2, he gives his personal view. He starts by talking about the earth and all that kind of stuff, but then he progresses and he gets to his own personal experiences. And remember, Solomon, King Solomon, the son of David, man who ruled from Jerusalem for decades, the wisest man to ever live, the wealthiest man to ever live. He looks for value, he looks for meaning, he looks for purpose in every single thing that he could possibly do. And he outlines it. He says in chapter 2, I looked forward in pleasures. Meaning he looked forward in relationships, he looked forward in money, he looked for it in building new buildings, he looked for it in going on long trips, he looked for it in his work, he looked for it in absolutely everything that he could possibly look for it in. And he sums it all up by saying it was like a striving after wind. It was something that he just could not get a hold of. Because he was looking for value, he was looking for purpose, he was looking for meaning, for satisfaction, where there was none to be found. Because he was looking for it in places that God was not. He wasn't looking for it in the Lord. He wasn't looking for meaning and purpose in God. He wasn't looking for it in a relationship with the Lord. He wasn't looking for it in honoring God with his life. He was looking for it in what could possibly make him happy. And it meant nothing. And he sums up in chapter 2. He finally, at the end of chapter 2, he comes to the point and he says, just like how he started in chapter 1, he says, so what does a man gain from all of his toil? What does a man gain from all of his labor? And essentially the response is, well, if the work, if the toil, if the labor, if everything that a man does in his life is done for himself, then he's gained nothing. And there was no point and there was no value to it. But then he followed that up with a very, very encouraging statement at the end of chapter 2. And he said, but for the sake of God, for the sake of pleasing God, to honor God, we should enjoy our labor. We should enjoy the life that God has given us to have. And it's coming off of this statement, it's coming off of this realization, if you will, that he dives in to chapter 3 and begins to talk about time. How there's a time for everything. Everything has its season, everything has a beginning, and everything has an ending. It says, for everything there is a season a time for every matter under heaven. And he begins this, and he talks about this by giving 14 comparisons. And these comparisons are literally one extreme to the other. The purpose of it to show that God is in control of all of it. Every single aspect of life, every single aspect of human existence is controlled, is governed, is overseen by God. He is the sovereign God who is in control of all things, no matter how good or how bad. God is in control of it all, at all times. And so he shows this, and he begins, says, there's a time to be born, and there's a time to die. This is kind of that umbrella statement that encompasses all of life. We have that time to be born, and we have that time to die. It's coming for all of us. We've already had the time to be born. Probably you're here. You were born. The time to die will one day get here. And everything that happens, from the moment that we're born to the moment that we die, God is actually overseeing and in control of all of it. There's a time and a reason and a season for everything in our life, whether it's something that's good or something that we see to be bad. There's a purpose for it. God has a purpose for it. God has a reason for it. And he's at work in all of it. See, what Solomon is doing, he's taking something that seems to be so random, something that seems to have no rhyme or reason to it at all, such as time and seasons, how one thing that's bad starts and seems to last forever, but then something that's really good starts and it seems to last no time at all. He's taking all of this and he's saying, look, all of it, whether the good or the bad, all of it is overseen by God. God's in control of all of it. Don't be discouraged by this. Don't be overly encouraged by that. Understand that God is in control of it, and he is working his purposes throughout eternity at all times. Now, as believers, that should be something that actually gives us encouragement. That should be something that actually gives us hope, to know that our God, the God who created us, the God who loves us, the God who's in control of all things, is actually in control of it. He's actually using everything in our life to mold us, to shape us, to conform us to the image of Jesus Christ so that he gets the honor and the glory with our life. That is something that we should be encouraged by. But if you're not a believer in Christ, then the passage of time is really something that, quite honestly, is depressing. Because time continues to go, it continues to take away. And what's at the end of it? It says there's a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. If you ask any farmer or any gardener, they'll tell you that the only way that they can actually see the fruits of their labor is if they work with nature in what they're doing. So they have to plant things at the right time. Because if they plant it at the wrong time, they're not going to get the results that they're looking for. They have to depend upon the rain. They have to depend upon the sun. They have to depend upon nature to make sure that all of their work comes to fruition with something to show for it. And quite honestly, there is a lesson to be learned there for us. As we go through life, we have to understand time is in God's control. We can't control time. We can't change time. We can't speed it up. We can't slow it down. We can't do any of that. But what we can do is submit to the one who controls time. You ever find yourself in a situation or a time in your life where you just feel like, I need to do something different? Maybe you're in a time and you think, I've got to make a change. I've got to do this or I've got to do that. And no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, you find that whatever happens, you find yourself in the exact same place because you can't move forward. Or maybe you find yourself in a different situation where you're so content, so at peace with where you are and what's going on in your life, you think, I don't want this to ever change. And then seemingly overnight, it's just completely different. Many of you have heard my testimony before, and you've heard me tell this story. It's a good illustration for the point. I can't help but tell you again. So when me and Laura got married, as you know, I wanted to go into ministry. I felt the Lord had called me to go into ministry. And so I spent day after day after day after day going online, looking for churches that were hiring, sending out my resume, and for an entire year, I heard nothing. Nothing from no one. Nobody wanted to hire me. I still can't believe it. For an entire year, that was what I did with my life. I mean, I had a job and I was going to work and all that kind of stuff, but I was miserable in it. Because it wasn't what I knew God had called me to do. It wasn't what I knew God wanted me to do. I knew He wanted me to go into ministry. And so I kept trying and I kept trying and I kept trying. And I did everything I could to try and make it work. I went to churches that I had relationships with pastors, and I'd go in there and be like, you know what? I think that that ministry could probably use somebody part-time. I think they could do that. I think you really need that. And they'd very kindly show me the door. But and we went so far as to pay out of our own pocket to fly to Houston, Texas, or right outside of Houston, Texas. We went so far as to pay out of our own pocket to fly out there to meet with a church because they were possibly looking to hire somebody part-time. Yes, that's what I did. I wanted to be in ministry so bad. That's what I did. And I kept trying to push the issue, and I kept trying to force it. And no matter what I did, it just wasn't working. None of it was working. Because I was trying to speed up time. I was trying to put myself into a season of life that God was not yet ready to say, yes, it's time to enter that season. And so often, church, that's what we do. Whether it's because we want to change something or because we want to keep something the same way, we try to insert ourselves into the controlling of time. And I'm going to keep it this way, or I'm going to change it to be like this. When in reality, the only thing that we can do is submit to the one who really is in control of it. If we would stop fighting against God when He says it's time for this or it's time for that, we would find that we're a lot more at peace. We are a lot more satisfied with life because we've given control of it to God. There's a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh. It's really awkward when you get those confused, isn't it? Oh, you need an example. Time to weep and a time to laugh. So several years ago, I was at a funeral, and it was a really, really sad affair. It was a very unexpected passing, the person who had passed away. And so everybody's very emotional, very upset. And so I'm sitting in the back row. I didn't really know the person all that well. I didn't know the family all that well, but I was a pastor, so I was there to kind of be a support for the family as best I could be. And I'm sitting there with a guy that I knew, and they start to, the preacher there, and he starts to give the eulogy, and he makes a comment. I don't remember exactly what he said, but the guy next to me said something extremely funny about it. And so I did that whole thing from the back of the church where you go, and I started to laugh. And apparently this was like a really emotional story that he's telling about how this guy was like really, really loving father and all this kind of stuff. And I started laughing. Most awkward thing I think that's ever happened to me in my life. I was laughing at a funeral when everybody else is crying. So, you know, then you have to do the whole thing where, I'm sorry, I laugh when I cry. It's awkward to get the laughing and the weeping confused, okay? It's awkward. There's a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. That one, I think, gives Laura trouble. She can embrace the best of them. She doesn't necessarily know when not to do that. But that's another story. A time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war, a time for peace. And the point of all of it, the main idea that Solomon is making from this entire list, it doesn't matter what season or what time of life it is, God is in control of it and God is working through it. So as believers, that's something to be encouraged by. As an unbeliever, honestly, that's something to be convicted by. But then Solomon moves from making these comparisons about life to making certain considerations about life based upon these comparisons. Look at verse 9. He says, "What gain has the worker from his toil? I've seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He's made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceived that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him." So, from all these comparisons, from talking about how there is a time, there's a season for everything in life, Solomon comes back with the same question that he has asked twice already in this writing. What gain has the worker from his toil? And once again, the way that it's written, it supposes a negative answer. So what gain does the worker have from his toil? Well, none at all. Because time just continues to go. And once again, this is the answer to time. This is the perspective to time when there is no relationship with the Lord, when there is no knowing who God is, when there is no knowing who Jesus is. The response is, what is the gain? What does the worker gain from his toil? Well, in the long run, nothing. Because time's going to continue to go. The seasons are going to continue to change. So unless you have that relationship with the Lord, there was no gain. But then Solomon follows this. He says, "I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He's made everything beautiful in its time, and he's put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end." Then verse 12, "I perceived that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man." So how should we respond to time? As believers, how should we respond to time? Knowing that the seasons are just going to continue to change. Our life is going to go from one part to another, to another, to another, until it ends. So how should we respond to that? Solomon follows this up and he makes a very pointed statement. He says, how should we respond to this? By being joyful. We should be joyful. We should enjoy life. We should take pleasure in what God has given us. Because guess what? Our life is a gift from God. Your existence is a gift from God. God thought of you enough. God loved you enough to create you, to make you in the image of himself, and to put you on this earth. And he has given you blessings. Everything that you have, the very fact that you exist, it is all a blessing and a gift from God. So how should we respond to it? By being joyful. This is quite a turn from chapter 1, is it not? What's the purpose of life? What's the point of life? I don't know. It's nothing. All is vanity and it's pointless and it's meaningless. Now we get to chapter 3. What should we do about the passage of time? What should we do about life in general? We should be joyful. We should rejoice in it. We should rejoice in it because we know that it is a gift from God. But you see, there's a very important verse that he puts in the middle of all this. It's verse 11. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart. We touched on this. We talked about this just a little bit last week. What is it? What does it mean? It says that God has put eternity into man's heart. It's that understanding, first of all, that this is not all there is. See, we have this understanding. We know instinctively, we know that there's more than where we are right now. What we have right now, there's more to it. There's more to existence. There's more to life than this very moment. We know that that's true. And we know that that's true because God has put into the hearts of man eternity. We're supposed to understand eternity. We're supposed to know that eternity exists. And we're supposed to know that at the end of time, there's eternity. When we say that God is an eternal God, what we mean is that he is outside time. He has no beginning. He has no end. So what is eternity? It's a time, quote unquote, or a period of existence that has no beginning and it has no end. That's eternity. And we're supposed to understand that at some point when life ends, when we get to the day that we die, time ends and we have eternity before us. So what is Solomon really saying? He says, yes, rejoice. Take pleasure in life. Enjoy it because it's a gift from God. But before we can do that, we have to understand eternity. Essentially, what he's saying here, church, is this. We're not ready to handle life until we figure out eternity. Let me say that again. We are not ready to handle life, meaning we are not ready to handle time until we have figured out eternity. Because eternity is what matters. Time, as much as we are controlled by it, as much as we have to bend to its will each and every day, there's more to it. There's eternity. And if we do not figure out eternity, then what we do in time does not matter. There's no point. There's no meaning to it. Because without eternity, time has no meaning. Which means we have to make a decision about Christ. We have to make a decision about eternity. And you see, here are the two options. And yes, there are only two options. The second option can be broken down into any number of choices that you want to take. But at the end of the day, it's really just two options. You either confess your sin and submit your life to Christ, or you say no to Christ and do whatever you want. See, that second choice can be broken down any way that you want, but at the end of the day, it's saying no to Christ and doing whatever you want. And until we make the decision about what we will do with eternity, until we understand, until we are ready to say, yes, God, I'm going to surrender to you. Jesus, thank you for sacrificing yourself on the cross for my sin. Lord, thank you for loving me enough to send your son to the cross to die for me. God, thank you for that. God, please save me from my sin. I give myself to you. I surrender myself to you. Until we come to the point where we have done that, we understand that, then we are not ready to face time. Because no matter what you do, no matter how long you do it, whatever you do in life, if you have not ultimately made that decision, if you have not come to the understanding of what eternity means and where you are going to be for eternity, then time does not matter. Because whatever you do in time will not change what comes for eternity. We talked about last week how we have that void. Everybody has that void in their life, and we all try to fill it. Everybody tries to fill it with something. But you see, it's a void that is created by eternity because God has put eternity in our heart. We look forward to eternity. We know that eternity is coming, and there's this void in our life because of that, and we try to fill it with so many different things. The problem is, so often we try to fill that eternal void with temporal things. And then we're left saying, that wasn't fulfilling. That wasn't satisfying. No, it wasn't. And it was never meant to be. See, God put that void in us so that it could be filled by only one thing. And that's by Him. I love what Solomon is doing here. I love how he's putting all of this together. As you see, time being the great equalizer, it treats all of us the same. We're all going to continue to get older. Time is going to continue to go. It's going to continue to tick on. And one day, we will all die. These are things that are going to happen. They're inevitable. And what Solomon is essentially doing, he's pointing out the truth. There is meaning, and there is value, and there is purpose in the time that we have right now. But until we understand eternity, we will not understand the meaning and the value of now. And as a result, there is no joy to be had, and there's no satisfaction to be experienced. Because we're trying to fill that void with something that is not God. And then he follows this up with the final certainties of life. Look at verse 15. That which is already has been. That which is to be already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? Well, that's some heavy stuff. In these certainties, Solomon begins by essentially asking the same question that so many people have been asking for centuries. Verse 16, he makes the statement, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness even there was wickedness. You might be asking the question, what does that mean? I mean, justice, righteousness, these are good things. These are positive things. Why is he saying that in those positive things there was wickedness? He's essentially asking the question, why do bad people prosper in their wickedness and righteous people suffer in their obedience? Why do bad things happen to good people? You know what? That is a question that has been around for so long, and that is a question that has been answered so many different ways. And the Bible answers that question. The Bible answers that question very, very well. But rather than going into all of the different answers that there are for that question, we're just going to focus on what Solomon says here. Because he says, you know, in the place of justice there was wickedness, and even in righteousness there there was wickedness. Meaning those who were trying to live in obedience, those who were trying to live in righteousness, to honor the Lord with their life, they were suffering because of it. How can that be a good thing? But then Solomon goes from making this observation that he's seen with his own eyes, and that we ourselves, we've seen it with our own eyes, how those who give no thought for God, do not care about honoring the Lord at any part of their life, they seem to prosper in what they do. But then those who try to honor the Lord, who try to strive to live in obedience and in righteousness, they seem to suffer for it. We've all seen this. And Solomon gives such a simple answer. It says, I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked. For there's a time for every matter and for every work. He takes it all the way back to the beginning of the chapter. There is a time, there's a season for everything in life. You know what? Typically what we end up focusing on, especially if we're the ones suffering, we focus on that negative. Like, God, I'm trying to live for you. God, I'm trying to honor you. I'm trying to live in righteousness. So, God, why am I suffering like this? It makes no sense to me, God. I'm not okay with it. I don't like it. So fix it. We've probably all had that conversation with God. But what Solomon does is he takes back a step. Because you see, so often when we are suffering, when we're trying to live in righteousness, we're trying to live in obedience, we're trying to honor the Lord with our life, if we're suffering because of it, then we immediately look out. And we immediately look to somebody who doesn't honor the Lord and say, why is it that they get everything that they want out of life and I'm stuck where I'm at? God, they don't care about you. They're not trying to honor you. So why do they get this and I'm suffering? And Solomon points it back and he says, to everything there's a season. For believers and for unbelievers alike, there's a season. And sometimes it's a season of quote-unquote prosperity, and sometimes it's a season of suffering. That's life. That's life in a fallen world. That's life in a world that has been marred by sin. But essentially what he says is, understand, God is going to judge the wicked, and he's going to judge the righteous. So the question is not, why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? The question really is, do those quote-unquote bad people know anything at all about eternity? Because you see, like we just said, there is eternity in our heart. There's eternity in the hearts of man. We're not satisfied with just right now. We have to know, what is eternity going to look like? Where will I be for eternity? How does now affect my eternity? See, we have to know that. We have to think that way. And so, what he's really doing is he's putting it back on himself. He said, I look out and I see this injustice. I see the wickedness that exists in good people suffering and bad people prospering. He said, I see the wickedness in this. And then he comes back and he puts it back on himself and he says, God ultimately is the one to judge. God's the one to judge wickedness. God's the one to judge righteousness. God's the one to judge responsibility for one action or responsibility for another action. God's responsible for determining eternity for one person and eternity for another person. Because God is the judge. So essentially, by putting it back on himself, we have to understand something, church. We're not responsible for anybody else. yes, when we're suffering, when we're doing something that we think is in obedience or is in righteousness and we suffer for it, we think, it's not fair that somebody else gets this and I don't. It's not fair that I've got to be in this position and they don't. But essentially what we're doing in that position is we're trying to take the place of God and determine what's right and what's wrong, what's righteous and what's unrighteous. And we have to remember and trust in the one who is actually in control of all things, the one who is over time, the one who can control time, the one who in time will judge both the righteous and the wicked. Because you see, by taking care of eternity, it makes it so much easier to rejoice in the present, regardless of if it's good or if it's bad, if it's easy or if it's hard, because we have eternity figured out. Remember, going all the way back to Philippians, we went through that book together, the pursuit of joyfulness. Where does joy come from? It doesn't come from our circumstances. And why does it not come from our circumstances? Because our circumstances are temporal. Even if you suffer with something or you deal with something for your entire life, your circumstances are temporal. Eternity trumps temporal. So how is it that believers in Christ can be joyful even in the midst of suffering, even in the midst of wickedness? Because we have eternity figured out. This is not all there is. We can rejoice and we can be happy. We can be joyful. We can be satisfied. We can have meaning. We can have purpose in literally any circumstance because the circumstance is temporal and our God is eternal. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. Solomon ends the chapter by pointing out once again the certainty of death. Everyone is going to die. Whether you were super successful and prosperous in life or whether you were less successful and prosperous, however it is that you define that. Everybody is going to die. And as a result, everybody's got to face eternity. I want to point out something, and it's something that we all know, but again, sometimes it helps to be reminded of it. Time has begun for us. We're in the middle of time right now. And yes, I have seen some of you looking at your phones and looking at your watches thinking, how much longer is he going to go? Time has already begun for us. But by God's grace, it has not yet ended. So what does this mean? First of all, if you're here this morning and you are not a believer, you have not put your faith and your trust in Jesus as Lord and Savior, then good news. You still have time right now to deal with eternity. You still have time right now to know what eternity is going to look like for you. You cannot truly deal with time. You cannot truly deal with life until you know what eternity holds for you. It's amazing. Once you know what eternity has, once you know where eternity is going to be, what eternity is going to look like for yourself, once you know that, it's amazing how much easier life seems to be. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that life is easy. Whether you're a believer or an unbeliever, life is not easy. But I can promise you this, as a believer, it's a whole lot more bearable. The difficult circumstances, the pains, all of that stuff that we face in life, it is a whole lot bearable, and it's a whole lot easier to remain satisfied and to remain joyful in life, even in the midst of hardship, when I know what my eternity looks like, when I know what that I have a relationship with Jesus Christ, when I know those things, the circumstances of today, they're not as overwhelming. They're not nearly as big. So if you've never put your faith and your trust in Jesus, then I would invite you to make that decision this morning. Stop going through life trying to find meaning and purpose and all of these different things in the world, because you're not going to do it. You're not going to succeed in it. The only thing that you could possibly do is get to the end of your life like Solomon does in this book and say, all of those things that I pursued, they held no value. They held no meaning. It was all vanity. Solomon is literally calling out from the pages of this book saying, don't be me. Don't try to find your value. Don't try to find your purpose and your meaning in things of the world, because you cannot do it. You will fail every time. Your purpose and your value come from God and God alone. If you're going to have joy, if you're going to have satisfaction, it will come from God and from nowhere else. So if you haven't put your faith and your trust in Jesus, then you have an opportunity this morning. You have an opportunity right now to know what eternity is going to mean, what eternity will hold, and to know the joy and the peace and the satisfaction of now. And maybe you're here this morning and you are a believer. You've already put your faith and your trust in Jesus. You know what eternity is going to hold. You know what eternity looks like. But you know what is still so easy to do? It's still so easy to get caught up in time. It's still so easy to get caught up in the mundane day-to-day, minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour things of life that we forget that my life is a gift from God. My existence is a gift from God. Everything I have, it's a gift from God. It's God's gift to me. So I should be rejoicing in that. I should rejoice in my work. I should rejoice in labor because it's something that God gave me to do. Should rejoice in my life because it's a life that God gave me to honor and glorify Him with. Maybe you're here today and you have completely forgotten that. You've allowed the everyday, mundane, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day existence to rob you of the truth and the knowledge that you are here by God's grace. You exist because of His love. Don't take the time that God has given you for granted. Understand that the time that God has given you, He's given you for Him. He's given to you to honor Him and to glorify Him. So however the Lord is speaking to you this morning, maybe He's telling you to make a decision this morning. Maybe He's telling you that today is the day to put your faith and trust in Jesus. Maybe He's telling you to forget about what tomorrow holds, the next day holds, and to just rejoice in who He is and who He's made you to be now. However He's speaking to you, I would encourage you to respond. You can respond by coming forward and laying it down at the altar. You can spend some time praying at your seat. We have counselors that will be up here. Pastor Jonathan and I will be up here if you need somebody to pray with you. But however the Lord is speaking, however He is moving in you right now, you need to respond. Don't put it off. Don't shrug it away. Don't expect the feeling to change. Respond to the Lord as He speaks to you. Gracious Heavenly Father, Lord, speak to our hearts this morning. Lord, convict us where we need convicting. Encourage us where we need encouragement. Exhort us where we need exhortation. But Father, may we boldly respond to you. May we be obedient to say, here I am, Lord. Send me. Father, speak to us this morning, and may we respond. In Jesus' name, amen.